heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation. And now, Malcolm.
Well, there have been at least 288 school shootings in the United States since January 1st, 2009. That's 57 times as many shootings as the other six G7 countries combined. It's a hell of a stat, isn't it? Homeland Security said in 2018, well, this accounted for 94 shooting incidents at schools with 163 casualties, making it by far the most in any one year that has been recorded ever. Okay. Well, President Trump comes out. He says a teacher would have shot the hell out of him before he knew what happened. That was referring to the Parkland slayings, one of the last ones that happened here in Florida. And that was a moment as well, a time when Parkland happened, that massacre, 17 students massacred, killed. Oh, what a horrific scene that was, people, you know. So here's the problem up front with school shootings. Like any other big conversation, it's not really a problem until it's a problem. You see, we have very short memories in this country, very, very short memories. Really, we do. We don't think in long-term capacity, even on topics such as this with our kids and the security of this next generation. And you see, if it isn't in recent days, it goes by our minds quickly. And I say, yeah, that happened. And this is the way our minds actually operate. And then we think, it's not going to happen again. Like, we're not dumb enough to do that again, are we, in society? I mean, someone's going to go in and shoot and kill kids in the school? I mean, why? You know? I mean, why when you look at that? So the short-term memory is one of our problems. We don't address problems. And here's what happens. And there will be another one. It's only a matter of days, hours, minutes until there's another shooter. Now, it could be your kid, could be a friend of your kid, could be somebody you know. But it's going to happen, people. So before you turn it off and say, it's not going to really matter, it matters. This is a problem that impacts all of us again, all of us. Even if you don't have kids, you may have grandkids, you have friends, you know somebody young. That's a big statement to make that, you know, there's going to be another shooting, but there's going to be another shooting. It's because it's become part of the vernacular. It's become part of the conversation. There's a lot of copycats out there. There are a lot of people that are watching this stuff, and the kids are watching this stuff. And there will be another shooting. The question is, where is it going to be, and will it impact you and your family? So this is a problem that we need to talk about. So what's being done about it? What's being done about it nationally? Let me tell you about what's happened. We talked about Parkland here. Let's get into Florida, what's happened in Florida. This is recent news, which has, you know, ramifications nationally to see what happens. But there was a lot of talk about, first of all, these gun-free zones. Now, listen, gun-free zones are the most stupidest thing we've ever done. I mean, it is a complete oxymoron, the gun-free zone thing. I mean, talk about a dumb thing. Talk about an invitation to a criminal, right? A gun-free zone. You're telling the criminal there's no guns here, so you can bring your gun in and do harm. But here's the thing, how dumb this is. So the Gun-Free School Zone Act is an act our United States Congress, yeah, those people, prohibiting any unauthorized, I love that word, unauthorized people, unauthorized individual from knowingly, they talk like it's some sort of an educated people are going to be, that have their mindset, you know, that are going to be doing this, that knowingly possess a loaded or unsecured firearm at a place that the individual knows, because you can't do bad, you can't do wrong here, people, right? Of course not. Or has reasonable cause to believe is a school zone as defined by 18 U.S.C. 921. The law applies to public, private, elementary schools and high schools, non-private property within 1,000 feet of them. Now, what the hell does that mean? What does that mean, a gun-free zone? And there's a lot of gun-free zones, but we're talking about schools today. So the idea is, and now, you know, this gun-free zone thing, this is something Congress did, again, right? And to put out there to say, okay, so if you're a bad guy and you don't follow laws, we want you to follow this law, and we want you to follow the signs we have up that say we're a gun-free zone, right? It rattles the mind, I have to tell you, who's coming up with this stuff. You know? So now the criminals who don't follow laws, these people see this as a field day. So they see all these gun-free zones in the schools are perfect targets. Now remember, these people, these people have mental deficiencies. Most of these cats, I mean, their screws are not quite tight. They're problems. And so the next problem is you would think, well, why would you go shoot kids up? Well, if you don't have screws tight, they're not looking at the human factor here. They're not, these are not even people to them. And we'll ask the expert today and find out. But I don't think these people understand that these, in many cases, now I'm not saying in all cases, but in many cases, these are not even being recognized as people. Okay, you get it? So they're like objects to them. And they're going to just kill as many people because, and there's a profile of these people, by the way. We're going to talk about that profile today. All right. So back to Florida again, after the Parkland massacre. I mean, and it was a massacre. And that was so complicated, that case, because you had so many problems, which you can look that up if you, but I mean, there were problems with the officials there that didn't follow through, problems with the school and the management of the school, and then, you know, law enforcement that didn't penetrate the building and went the other way. And there's a whole host of things that were wrong with Parkland. That's another story for another day, people. But, and that obviously added to the casualty count here, because you've got to disarm the cat as soon as you can. You can't let the cat keep shooting because, again, that's what they're trying to, it's target practice for them. They're just taking down people. They don't even realize, some of these people don't even know they're people, which I know doesn't make a lot of sense. Don't make a lot of sense to me either, but yeah. So Governor DeSantis now signs a bill that allows teachers to be armed in classrooms of public schools. Now, we talked about this. We've talked about this for a while. Should we arm the teachers? Well, you know, there's a saying out there, people. And the saying is this. The best thing to have with a bad guy with a gun, they say, is a good guy with a gun. Now, do you subscribe to that theory? Well, you have to subscribe to that theory. Because the bad guy with a gun, who else is going to put that person out of their misery? Right? I mean, because that's what you got to do. You got to stop that shooter in their track. I mean, you've got to put them out of their misery quick before they kill more, because that's what they're doing, target practice, because they're deranged. No sane person can go there and start shooting up kids. Look at Sandy Hook. What sane person could do that and shoot their mother in the process? I mean, these are sick people. Well, but then again, you know, do any of us really know how many people we see on a daily basis that have all their capacity to think at a normal level? We don't know. We don't know who. It's just like road rage. We talked about that the other day. I mean, we have no way of knowing. You got to be careful, right? So this bill then in Florida, so it's a 54-page Senate bill, 7030, and it was a lot of debate. It was very contentious, and it passed through the legislative session, the Senate bill, you know, in Florida. And a lot of criticism, of course. Ah, you can't arm these people. Now, there's a whole lot more to this. The teachers and the staff to be armed, and the school districts. It's called the Guardian Program. And it allows them and volunteers now to carry a gun on campus after they're screened and trained by the sheriff's office. So it's a whole process here that has to happen. You're not just arming people and putting them out there. They have to go through training. They have to understand the ramifications. Now, could there be a problem? There could be. Now, some people are pointing that out. What if the teacher leaves the gun somewhere? What if something happens? What if? Well, yeah, something can happen, people. But what's the alternative? Just leave everybody a sitting ducks in gun-free zones? Well, of course, the Democrats are upset with this. And the teachers' union strongly objected, saying it makes schools less safe. So what's their alternative? You know, I love the other side when they come up with these sort of sound bites. What's their answer back, though? I'm not hearing an answer back. So what's their answer to the problem? Well, their answer is just remove guns entirely from the planet. So we'll just have some special being up in the stratosphere on another planet, the universal, some higher power, remove all the guns and ammunition from Earth. You see, that's as easy as it can be, people. We'll just call that order up into the carry-out position and ask them to remove all the guns from the planet. I mean, it's stupid talk. Stupid talk. Criminals are not going to turn their guns in, even if we all agree to that as a society. So, you know, as a group here, as a collective society, if we said, okay, we all agree, no guns. I mean, how are we going to do that? You think the bad people are going to play along with that? Oh, man. So they're upset with this. And so Florida is one of these states that's doing something about it. And there's petitions that are going to start to go through, and because they're trying to get the governor to read. And the governor's, you know, he's just blocking his ears. He doesn't want to hear anything. And by the way, he didn't taunt anybody with this. He didn't do an official press conference or anything else. He just signed the bill, put it into play. He didn't want to make it a big deal, although it is a big deal. And it's something that we need to talk about nationally. Now, there are other states that are taking some positions here. For instance, Tennessee is another one. There's a bill that would permit employees with concealed carry permits to carry firearms in schools again. But this one here says require no additional training to do so, which I don't understand that one. But we'll see what happens in Tennessee. And then Texas. The Texas Senate has passed a bill that would allow school employees armed through the state's school marshal program to carry their weapons rather than locking them up, as the law currently mandates. So these are different versions of them. Now, not the teachers per se. And of course, everybody's wondering, what will something federally happen on this? Will the Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, will she do something to? And of course, we don't expect anything to really happen there either. So again, we're a very reactionary society, friends. We're not proactive. It's one of the biggest problems we have today, is where we react to problems. So the next school shooting, that's when all the talking heads will get on there and their heads will explode and political parties will all come up to the mic and suggest it's time to do something. You can see the scene already. You know they're going to be there. It's time to do something. That's enough. So let's say somebody goes in tomorrow and shoots and kills up another 17 people somewhere. What do you think is going to happen? Well, it's time to do something. We got to do something. We can't let this go on. And that'll go on for a few days, maybe a week, or it might be 2 weeks. I don't think it'll be 2 weeks. Again, we have short memory problems here in this country. So we'll be done with it in about a week if we're lucky. And then we'll move on to the next problem. We're fighting about Democrat-Republican crap, get back to other stuff that isn't going to do anything for anybody. And then again, we got to question these whole gun-free zones is another thing. So it comes back to, who are these shooters? Well, people, they're depressed. They're people that are angry at society. They have rage. And there's a whole study of these people, who they are. They're male. They're predominantly men. They're boys. They're kids. They're people. They're testosterone, right? So they're all male. It's another problem we'll talk to him about and see what's up with that, you know? I mean, you don't see a lot of women going and shooting up schools, right? Well, we've got to call it as we see it here, people, right? But we want to take a look at the profile of these school shooters. I have a whole profile here that I think is very interesting. And some of the characteristics of these kids and students and people you might meet on a daily basis. And it's always somebody that looks a little, you can get a funny feeling with certain people. Just take a look at some of the individuals, the previous shooters, and you'll see what I mean. I don't know what it is, people, but I know this is a little stereotyping, but I think we have to profile. I think profiling is important today, quite frankly. If that means we can stop another mass shooting, then I say let's profile all day long, if that's what it takes there. So there's the bullying factor, there's the family factor, and there's, of course, the weapons of choice factor. We'll discuss all that next, friends, on The Voice of a Nation here. We'll be right back with Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming, from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, so we're joined now by Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro, retired police lieutenant, director of school security. He's a master trainer and the owner of Pangaro Training. He's a host of Chasing Justice. It's a program on America Out Loud Talk Radio, 3 p.m. It's an outstanding program. If you haven't listened, you will enjoy it tremendously. Well, law enforcement issues, but political issues, life issues, talks about everything on there. Here's the big question at 30,000 feet. What's the leading cause of school shootings today? What's the leading cause? What's doing it?
This is a question that, as you know, I've dedicated my life to trying to help to keep people safe. And we try and look and see if we can tell who is prone to this type of violence. So that's really the key. Right now, up to this point, we've been so reactionary to these shootings. We're teaching everyone how to lock down, how to run away, how to hide, and fight, which is great, because if it happens right this minute, you've got to have those things in place. But we need to go further now. These things are not stopping. The phenomenon is not just a flash in the pan. This is now, as you were saying earlier, this is now becoming a regular event, whether it's in schools, businesses, even out in the public, wherever people gather. These type of people who are venting their rage and their anger through the use of weapons and killing people. So our shooters, you know, there's a lot to be said about, you know, who these people are, but we know when we go back and investigate them that there were some kids, if not lots of kids, who had an idea who might be dangerous. And I think we see that in every event. We also see that in workplaces. You know, we've all worked with somebody that we thought was a little off.
That's right.
You know, and the answer is always, well, that's just the way Bob is, you know, and these are the kind of things we need to look at. So when we look at, you know, who these kids are that are doing the shootings, you were right. About 96% of the shooters, of all active shooter type people, active killers, are male. That's a reality. You can't break the statistic. Only
10% of them. Let's stop there. Why? Tell me why that is. Why? I mean, do you have an answer for that? Why? Is it just it's baked into the cake?
I think it is. We look at the same thing, you know, the statistics between the difference between male and female, which is something we're not allowed to talk about in our society anymore.
That's right.
Political correctness.
That's right.
Says that there's no differences until we actually look at facts on the ground. So let me clarify for all our PC friends who are listening in. There's no better, male or female. In that way, we're all the same. But in reality, we do have different things that motivate us, that cause us to react. When we look at society, males are more aggressive in general. And I think we see this 96% factor that they're males has to tell you that there's some truth to that. So we look at that and we say, is that because of the culture? I mean, do young boys growing up playing violent games, does that make them more aggressive? Or are they aggressive before that? Is that the nature of the male? So that's an argument for other people other than us. But statistically, 96% of the time it's male. When it's in schools, it's somebody between 14 and 18 years old. The interesting statistic to me was that it used to be 15 to 18, but because the danger in middle schools is now equal to the danger in high schools, the age has been dropped down. The average shooter is now between 14 and 18 when it's in a school. So that tells you, you know, you were saying profile, and I'd have to say that there's no one specific profile. There are things that we can look at to be indicators of these kind of things. So you have males. And now you want to look at, you know, there's a myth out there that the shooters are bullied, that they're the victims of bullies. And that's not always the case. What we find, some kids that are shooters have been bullied. We also find that there's a lot of times the kid who is the bully is the shooter.
Exactly, exactly.
We find kids who are ostracized and alone from their group. And when you cross any of those two tents, bullied, a bully, or ostracized, and you cross those two tents, now you have a potential for a violent person to strike out.
The stats I have, Joe, are this, that, again, it is a predominant theme, if you will, back to this anger and revenge, and that 75% of school shooters felt bullied or harassed by other students. That's a big number, if that is close to accurate here. Now, sometimes shooters felt unfairly treated by their teachers. So they're taking a victim role. We talk a lot about victims and victors and, you know, victim. It's a victim mentality. And then it says they seldom have specific targets, Joe, but they kill randomly which is what I talked about actually up front, now that I see that. So they kill randomly in order to inflict the most harm. In other words, do you agree with that statement? They don't know what they're just shooting away. It's like target practice. Is that a true statement?
Well, I think there's probably the predominant number of the shootings. They are looking for, you know, the entire school population is their target because all those people made them feel a certain way.
Exactly.
And in some instances, you know, we know that there are certain specific people that have really caused me a problem.
Well, they got under their skin. And isn't it about revenge at that point? Aren't these people trying to seek revenge, Joe?
I think it's revenge, but I think there's also a way of fighting back. You know, I think in a lot of these cases, we see that our responses to bullying, while we, a lot of districts and a lot of places, communities have these thoughts of, you know, we take bullying very seriously. You know, we have all these rules in place. Then you go and actually speak to the kids, which I do. When I do my threat assessments, I interview students.
Okay.
And I will find out that they say, some places, yeah, they take it very serious. But in majority of them, they say, no, it's a joke. You know, if you are somebody and you're causing a problem, nothing happens to you. So I think in a lot of it is that because we can't tell people the punishments that people receive, you know, it can't be public. Hey, Harry bullied Johnny and Harry is now going to be punished A, B, C, and D. It's a private thing. The victim, the kid who's bullied or ostracized and treated badly, doesn't see any relief. So what, something might go on in the background and the bully is, you know, suspended for a day or two or whatever. The victim doesn't see a big change. What I also see, and this is from my own experience, my son experienced a bullying, not as a victim, but as a witness. And this affects these kids as well. He saw this kid being bullied, and my son, Jack, he stood up to try and help the kid. And the school did not respond properly. And the victim did not see relief. And Jack would say, Dad, you got to see the kid that was the bully. As soon as the teacher turns her back, she looks at this kid and giving him, like, you know, cutting the throat, we're coming to get you. So the bully didn't learn his lesson. The punishment was not serious enough where the bully said, hey, I better knock this off. Mm-hmm. They just try and find opportunity to continue to do it. Sure. So our bullying, while we, the administrators and everybody talk about, oh, we really take it serious. If the kids don't think you take it serious, then you really don't have an effective anti-bullying program. So I think we really need to look at this very closely of how we respond to this and find out from the kids, do they think it's effective?
Yeah, yeah. I think peer pressure is one of the biggest problems, Joe, growing up. We, you know, you remember when you well, might be a few years for you and I, buddy, but we remember when we were young to some degree, right? And mm-hmm. And it, the bullying exists, right? It exists in school. I mean, you see it in all different forms. And I see it today. I see it with my own kids. They bring it up or that somebody tries to do something or influence them in some way. And that's how kids get involved in drugs and do other, you know, really horrible things and go down the wrong path. It really is peer pressure. A lot of this falls back down to peer pressure here.
And I think the things that kids today have to contend with that you and I did not have to contend with is the internet and social media.
That's it.
There is never a respite when you're a bullied kid, when that social media is on, because these kids will get on and they'll text horrible things to you. They'll say, look at how many kids are committing suicide of bullying that never did before, because they get these social media messages. We all hate you. You're ugly. You're horrible. Kill yourself. Nobody wants you. These constant messages come to these kids, even when they're, you know, it used to be get out of the school and the bullying would stop until the next day and you could have a breather. This doesn't end. Our society being so connected, it connects us positively and it connects us negatively also.
That's
and
a great
that's
point,
Joe. And
I
think that's something these kids have to deal with that we didn't.
Yeah, it's a fantastic point. You're right. Back then, Joe, you're right. You could leave that day, think about that, from school and then, you know, you'd at least have some, you'd have the respite at the end of the day, right, Joe, after school, you know. But today, you're right, it's 24/7 incessantly. We're connected. And this is one of the problems, is the connectivity, which we talk about constantly in a lot of different walks of life. And here it is here. Let's, before we leave the school shooter profile, I want to share a few things with you, Joe, and let me come down to a list of a few things. And this is a very succinct list, I think, of the potential profile of a school shooter. And tell me if you agree with some of these things or not. And this particular list comes out of the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, Dr. George Everly, Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences. And I think it's worth looking at some of this here. School shooters tend to be socially awkward and avoidant and often isolate themselves with few, if any, friends. So that's a sign you see out there, right, Joe? I mean, that's a common
sign.
Absolutely,
and I certainly agree with that.
Yeah, so they're sometimes described as strange. I would agree with that. You?
You know, I think you're right, because we've all met kids who are just a little bit different. You know, maybe they're creative in a different way, or they see the world differently. It doesn't make them bad. They're right. Just different. And we know in the world of kids, being different is a reason to pick on you.
Yeah, and that's really, that gets me a little unsettled there, because we want kids to be different, Joe. We want a society that pushes innovation. We want a society that recognizes uniqueness. We want a society that represents your individualism of a person. And yet you're right, when we point that person out as different, strange, or even the word unique, Joe, that's a kind of a slippery slope there, isn't it, this one here?
It is. That's a tough one, but I would absolutely agree with that, that a lot of these kids are either seen as different, and because of that, they don't fit in. They're not invited to sit at lunch. They're not invited to the parties,
mm-hmm.
and they
That's
start
right.
to feel isolated from everyone, and therefore, you know, you might start getting angry that you're not invited to parties, that, you know,
Absolutely.
You can't have friends.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's why as a kid, I always decided I was going to become the life of the party, Joe, you know, see, and then you couldn't have the party without me. See, that was an easy one there, right?
Well, I agree with that too. I think there's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Then you're in on the whole thing there. But, you know, but here's another thing here. Now, this next one is very important, Joe. I think you'll agree. They seem to have a penchant for retreat into fantasy, especially when under stress. So they're using fantasy. I want to talk about that a moment with you as we pause through this list here. I want to talk about this fantasy, Joe, okay? Because I sure. think this is one of the biggest problems right here. And I want to touch into there's two things that are on my mind that are really problematic with this topic. One of them is the media and how they are handling all of this. And the second thing is, back to that technology, all of the various tools that are accessible to our young folks to be able to get into that fantasy land. So one of the things I've seen from my own son, Joe, is when I've walked in and he was playing with some video games on his Nintendo thing. And I seen, you know, the video games are people shooting each. Let's talk about this a moment. They're shooting each other up. So you've got you're controlling the control, and you have mm-hmm. an armed man there, and you're shooting all these people down in front of you. And it's funny as hell, Joe, funny as hell to the kids that there's massacre and blood thrown all over the place as you're shooting things down. Now, talk to me a moment. I don't think you and I have to be a psychiatric expert or an Einstein here to figure out. I mean, can you tell me that can't possibly impact somebody's mind?
Well, I think it would be foolish to think that it doesn't, because you are a product of your environment. You're a product of what you do. This is why we try and instill morals and values, and we try and live as role models,
mm-hmm.
because people see those things and hopefully they model them.
Yeah.
Well, the kids are playing these games that, you know, these first person shooting games. I think there's got to be some desensitization to the idea of shooting someone. I know they use this training sometimes in military. They can use videos to help the people train. You know, back in the day, you and I, we played Army Man.
That's
and,
right.
you know, we ran around and we shot the enemy too. Mm-hmm. Only we didn't see their head explode. We didn't see blood go flying everywhere. They didn't actually fall down. And he keeps on going.
Well, that's it. You played that, or you played with plastic toys, or you played with, a plastic something. And you're right. You're right. Yeah.
So that aggression, that kind of aggression, that conflict thing, again, for boys, is very, very common. That's part of what, as human beings, got us to survive. You had to fight with other groups, other people for survival. But these games that kids play today, they are very realistic. What was that one game, School Shooter, that actually came out? You could play first person going in and shooting the school.
Yeah, I heard about that.
I cannot believe they came up with that. But any of these other games...
Was that pulled off the market, Joe, or is that still out there, do you know?
I couldn't tell you right at this moment. I know there was a lot of hue and cry about it.
Controversy,
That it should have come out. Because how could you do a thing like that?
I mean, that's insane.
There is a moment that shocks your senses.
Right.
And, you know, okay, one thing, they have the war game, shooting the aliens, shooting the dead walkers and all that. But to have a game where a kid can play going into shooting a school shocks the senses.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think that's part of it. It desensitizes you to the shooting, and you see all that response.
Yeah.
I think that's got to be a part of the overall.
You know, Joe, we played, again, as kids now, and tell me if you can relate to the same stuff. Now, we played cops and robbers. We played Indians and cowboys. We played school. We even played church. I mean, we played all kinds of games as kids. I mean, did you do the same?
Of course.
Yeah, right? I mean,
it was a lot of fun. That's part of what you did. You played, you know, these different right. things. And again, we saw movies. We emulate the movies. And, you know, that was a way to, you empowered yourself. You know, I remember playing Army right. because you would see an Army movie. You're proud of your country and they right. fought the enemy. And now you're climbing over the hill and you're mm-hmm. leading your men. And, yeah. You know, it was that's fun. Yeah.
Did you have G.I. Joe when you were a kid, a G.I. Joe?
I did. I had the full size G.I. Joe.
I did too.
We didn't have the little ones. I had the big one for Kung Fu Grip and all that stuff.
Oh, God. Yeah. No, I had the G.I. Joes. I had those. But we used to, yeah, and I used to play in the dirt and make all these roads. And I mean, it was a simple. There was no electronics. I mean, you know, that just didn't exist. Yeah, we didn't have any of that, buddy.
I believe there's some kind of connection with the videos, but at the same time, the impulses you and I had as young boys mm-hmm. is the same impulses kids have today. Only today we're panicked over it, and we find it completely unacceptable that they play those kind of things. But yeah. I think that's like trying to defy nature.
Yeah,
it's just how it's harnessed. We didn't grow up and go out and kill people.
Well, I want to talk to you about that in a moment here about these school drills. So let's hold that thought here. But I want to come back to something else. And we're on this topic about Joe. If you're at a movie and you're watching a movie like myself, and let's say it's a movie, Joe, that is really got your adrenaline pumping. Now, think about this a moment. Really think about this. And so your adrenaline's pumping. And let's say it's Fast Cars, Joe. And they're driving faster. They're in wicked stuff. But it's really an exciting movie. And, you know, the fast cars and there's a getaway thing and everything, you know. Then you leave the movie theater and you get in your car, Joe, and you pull mm-hmm. out on the road. And, Joe, does it ever get in? Do you ever find yourself, I mean, I can't imagine what your answer will be as a former police officer. But hold on now. Do you ever get in the car and find yourself almost where you press the gas too much and then you recognize, you say, oh, wow, I got to back off of that. Has that ever happened to you?
I think it absolutely has, because you know what, especially if you just saw something that was mm-hmm. visually and mentally stimulating and they're driving a car and you get out in your car and if you have a sports type of a kind of car, mm-hmm. you know, hey, that was really a cool move the guy made. You know, as police officer, we were trained to drive really fast.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you the fun those days were. We would go out and drive, you know, doing the spinning around and backing mm-hmm. up at 100 miles an hour. That was adrenaline filled.
Yeah, yeah.
The difference, and I think I know where you're going here, Malcolm, is that mm-hmm, mm-hmm. driving a car really fast, while it could be dangerous, is not the same as now watching a shooting scene in a movie and going, hey, let me pull a gun out and shoot 20 people. There's a line that we draw between what could be exciting and exhilarating and what is dangerous or negative.
There are schools now, and you can speak about this, Joe, as a trainer in schools, but from what I understand now, when I was a kid, the biggest drill we had was a fire alarm. A fire alarm thing would go off, and then you'd go outside mm-hmm. and you'd get a 15-minute break, and they would do this. It was an alarm, you know? And sometimes you would try to hide in the men's room, the boys' room at that time, so you didn't want to, because you didn't want to go out. So you wanted to see if you could avoid the fire alarm, you see? Yeah. And hide in the school. That was always the way we tried to do that. But many times the teacher come in and find us, and then we had to go out, right, and get reprimanded in the process. But these, now they're having mass shooting drills. Now they're having, like, the kids are being trained. Like, this is, like, I didn't even know this was happening, Joe. Is that what's happening now in the schools? There's mass shooting drills now? Is that what I understand?
Yes. It's been going on for a while now. Most places refer to them as lockdown drills.
Lockdown drills? Tell me about them.
It's a lockdown drill. So the purpose of a lockdown drill, just like a fire drill or any drill, any kind of practice where you need to think of something physically, mm-hmm. Think of something mentally and then do something physically, mm-hmm. you're going to be able to do it better if you understand the concept and then you walk through it. So a lot of the training that I do has that component. I call it talk, walk, run. We talk about a concept so we all understand it. Then we physically walk through the processes, whether it's interview, interrogation, or lockdowns, and then we run a drill at high speed so that you can see how it's actually going to go. And the whole idea of this with the schools is to get these kids ready so that in an event that an active shooter erupts in the building somewhere, we can recognize the signs that there's danger and that the kids and the staff can respond quickly to secure themselves as best as they can. Now, that might include locking down in the classroom. That might include fleeing the building if that's the appropriate thing to do. It's all very liquid. But what happens is human nature, again, comes back to us. When you're in the middle of a traumatic situation, we have a couple of things we can do: fight, flight, or freeze. Mm-hmm. If we've never thought about something, if we've never walked through how to experience that adrenaline, that trauma, that fear, when something happens, a lot of us will freeze. Or we will freeze and then make the wrong move, or we will overreact. So the whole idea of a drill is so that when we hear the command to lock down, instead of panicking and not knowing what to do, exactly, we quickly lock the door, cover the window, get to the corner, barricade the doors. You know, we do it in schools now regularly. You know, you and me, Malcolm, we could probably talk about, you know, a duck and cover. We were ducking and covering from nuclear bombs.
That's right.
Because our parents and the authorities at the time recognized the danger.
Yeah.
And the best place for us to be was under something to prevent from falling. I don't know. It's a nuclear bomb. They had to give us something to do so that we felt better. And we're doing that for these kids because we know statistically, if you look at these shooting incidents, the minute the shooter announces their presence, whether it's trying to get through the front door or a kid popping up in a classroom with a gun, you have seconds to respond to do the right thing to protect yourself.
Okay.
So the faster you can respond in the absence of fear, I call it inoculating people to fear,
okay,
is that you have to just respond as quickly as you can to do what you're supposed to. And that's the purpose of the drills.
Okay.
So we go through these drills so that people will respond with rote memory of what they should do. Close the door, lock the door, barricade the door, you know, get out of the way.
Okay, the other big component we have to talk about, Joe, is the media component. And this is something that is concerning to me. And that is that, again, a lot of these characters, I think, do this for the fame and the glory. It's just like terrorists. Many of them do it because they see on the television screens and they get the publicity for what they're doing. So a lot of these television programs and a lot of the different media components on social media, they continue to show the picture of the shooter or the killer, the massacre, and they show it again and again and again and again and again. And you'll see it in your breakfast while you're having your breakfast. You'll see it in the afternoon. You'll see it all the time. And they'll keep showing that and showing that and showing that. I have a problem with that, Joe, in how we seem to memorialize the killers and not the people who've lost their life, number one, which is one of the reasons I don't use a lot of these. I don't use faces like I don't put them on our platform. I don't like to show killers and massacres and terrorists on our platform. First of all, I don't want to see these cats, and I don't want our people and our readers and listeners and all of our people having to see these cats. So I tend to not put them on there. I mean, I don't even like to give their names glory in the moment, you understand. But isn't that a problem? We're back to the what we call the desensitizing of a society. I think we're not only desensitizing it, but we're also glamorizing it. And I think the future killers are seeing that these people had their name in lights for X amount of time. Talk to me.
So I think, you know, connect the dots. You got a kid that's ostracized. He's a nobody. He feels weak. He feels alone. And he sees on the news, you know, not so much what a great thing these killers do. I don't think they see that. I think what they see is they do see, hey, there's some acceptance. My people will know me. I'm not a nothing. I'm not a nobody. So I think there is part of that in some of them. I think the other thing that the kids see, these shooters who do this, is that they see that the media puts it out there that that's an okay response to their problem. You know, I'm bullied. I don't feel happy. I'm left out. I hate these people. Hey, here's what I can do. I can go get them. This is how these other kids.
So what can the media do differently, Joe? What can they do differently?
I'll tell you, you know, the bottom line is they're going to publicize these things because they are horrific, and therefore they're in everybody's mind. When something happens, we all talk about it, and I think the anomaly, the shooter, is such an anomaly to normal people that we would never think to go to a school and shoot up babies like they did in Sandy Hook. But this person did it, so who is this?
It becomes news. It's news. It's news. It's newsworthy, right?
I agree with not using their names, though. I wouldn't glorify them.
And their photographs. Their photographs. Well, I keep showing their ugly face.
Recently we're seeing the
heroes. Yeah.
Recently we're seeing the heroes who fought back. Those are people we should think about.
So why can't we change that? Well, why can't we get the media? I've already changed it. I celebrate the people, not the killers, you know? Why can't we change that? Why can't we expect media to do a better job, right?
Well, I think we have to demand it. And I think what we're starting to see is you're seeing more people, just like you're saying, going, I'm not going to use their name. I'm just going to talk about, you know, what happened, and I'll talk about the victims.
What steps can we take at this point? What would you say concisely can we do to curtail and prevent future shootings?
Okay, the key is, like I said earlier, we're preparing everyone to respond when it happens. The next thing we all have to do is we have to be able to spot the danger before it erupts. Same. So student-based threat assessments are something that we offer now at Pangaro Training True Security. It's not a commercial, but that's what we're doing now because I see this. There are things that we can see that these kids do, things they say, they draw, they write, they put on social media that we can identify so that we can intervene before they shoot up the school. That is where everyone needs to start concentrating on. How do we spot this before it happens so that we can prevent the tragedy for the victims and for the kid who did it themselves?
That's right. How do we stop this before it happens? That is a perfect place to end that conversation, Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro. And you hear Lieutenant Joe here. I mean, I always love talking to him, as you love listening to him, friends. And you hear him every day at 3 p.m. on the network here. He's doing an awesome job. Many times he'll have the neighborhood guys in, or sometimes you hear him do a solo, but he's always worth listening to. Common sense. A lot of it's just good stuff. But it's impressive talk radio at the end of the day. And that's what our network is all about here. So, friends, this program, The Voice of a Nation, it comes to you every day here, weekday, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is this program here. It's a big mission, what we're doing here, but if by chance you missed that show, you're going to find there's an encore the following morning at 8 a.m. You'll find it on the morning drive as well, the show we did from the night before. But I hope you can tune in at 6 p.m. You can catch it on all of our apps, Android, Apple, Alexa, iHeartRadio, The Network. We have a fantastic media player as well to tell you about. You can get all of our programming on podcast now on the media player. It is state of the art. We are breaking ground, new ground. We are revolutionizing this whole business here at America Out Loud. And all of that you'll find on our live media player. It's incredible. You can pick it up anywhere in the world and listen to all these shows on podcast or live streaming talk radio. It hardly gets any better than that. Let's now bring in the peanut gallery, friends, and open it up and talk about what we've discussed here today and what we can do to prevent the next school shooting.
Pat Boone here for the folks at Swiss America. Rock solid foundations are vital in life, in business, and in finance, because in the end, only what we've built on a firm foundation will withstand the storms of life. Today, the economic storms are raging and the foundations of everything are being tested. The world economy has never looked shakier. And gold, the world's oldest and most trusted form of money, is also grabbing headlines. Now is the time to put your future on a rock-solid foundation. Swiss America will help you create an indestructible asset today. Discover the timeless truth about gold and silver by calling Swiss America or visiting online at SwissAmerica.com.
800-978-3901. Once again, that's 800-978-3901.
So today, our peanut gallery, Karen Schoen, joins us. She's an educator, dean, a retired teacher, and activist focused on Save It America. You will see her write-ins columns on America Out Loud. Ava Armstrong is with us, an author, political commentator, social media influencer. All her books are on Amazon or the America Out Loud bookstore. And Arnetta Notkin is with us, a constitutionalist, political commentator, retired financial planner. Now, let me ask you, Karen, up front here, because I really don't know. How many years has it been since you've retired from the school system?
About 20.
How much has the school system changed? And back to the subject of school shooting now, and the concerns and the dangers of when you were in the classroom. Draw some comparisons for me.
Well, I was part of the transition, which I am not proud of. And by transition, I mean from individuality into collectivism. And this is what our kids are being taught today. They have to be part of the group. They can't really have any independent thought. And this, to me, is the major problem. Because as Joe pointed out, every individual has an inherent right, has an inherent feeling inside that they want to do something to express themselves. And school today is nothing more than a psychological manipulation of the student into one train of thought. And when that happens, you cannot express yourself, because as you express yourself, you are outside the realm. Now, they also recognize, and this has been psychologically pointed out hundreds of thousands of times, which is why they're able to do it, that the human brain, the human being, can only think of one thought at one time. You can't think of multiple thoughts simultaneously. You can only think of one thing. So if you take away an individual's right to express themselves in one direction, guess what they're going to do? They're going to express themselves in a different direction.
Interesting. Interesting. So you're saying this whole demeanor in the school system and how they're handling the kids and this whole one size fits all?
Be an individual and go make a science project that everybody says, wow, this is terrific. It's fabulous against global warming, but it's fabulous.
Right.
You're not allowed to do that.
Right.
So if you disagree with anything, you are shoved back in that little box and you're told, behave, you have to behave, you have to agree with everybody else.
Okay. Okay, Ava, so what's on your mind as far as how to stop school shootings? You hear Lieutenant Joe, you hear what he puts out there. We had so much to talk about. We didn't even finish really the profile of what a school shooter is, but how do we stop these things?
Karen brought up some very, very good points. The actual death of critical thinking in our school system
plays
is a major,
that.
It's a major aspect. Mm-hmm. From my vantage point, we cannot stop society from being bad parents, giving kids violent games to play. There's just no way to control that. Mm-hmm. However, we can control what happens inside a school building. And I've always been a person who looks at Israel as a model. Israel as a country, I know, is much smaller than us, but they look at things differently than we do. More guns equals less crime in Israel overall. But schools in Israel are incredibly safe. They even have safe rooms. They have guns everywhere. I mean, teachers are armed. Not all teachers are armed, but
those who want to be armed are armed, and they go through training as well.
Yes, and they also have armed security guards as well on the school site. They're just incredibly security driven, and it's amazing. The thing that Joe Pangaro said too that really struck me: guns are a tool, and as children, you know, playing with a toy gun and all that, cowboys or whatever you want to call it,
right?
You know, army men. I mean, all kids, that's a very natural kind of play.
It is.
And you know, as a child, we're very innocent, and we see the gun. It could be a ray gun. You could be playing aliens. You know, I did all this stuff. I had brothers, you know, and it was fun.
Yeah.
And these kinds of things are very natural. So we have to teach children that guns are a tool. They're not, it's not some big scary boo-boo thing. It's a tool. And not too many years ago, we were feeding ourselves by heading out into the woods to get a deer or something to eat.
Well, but what's happened now, it's all changed because the kids are now hearing the political argument of the adults. So here's the thing, the problem with what you just put out there, Ava, and Arnetta, I'll go to you on answering this here. And here's the challenge. If the adults cannot get it right, so if the adults can't even have a conversation and come to any sort of an agreement with guns, and they can't, clearly, how are the kids going to do that, Arnetta? They're not, are they?
No, they're not. And living in a PC environment in Los Angeles, I'll tell you, when my son was 3 years old, he was in a preschool, and one of the children brought a toy gun to school to play Cowboys and Indians. The parents just rose up and just absolutely had a fit. So my son, the next day, he had never seen a gun. He had never played with a gun, but he picked up a cracker, bit a hole out of it, and used it as a gun, shooting. So it's also that male response to that stimulus. Now, what we were taught was, if you do away with, if guns become this mystery, then they were going to become even more intriguing, particularly to children. I took my son, when he was very young, out in a field, and had him shoot a gun, and he hated it so much because it hurt his ears, he lost that fascination. Mm-hmm. So if you teach the safety part versus they are tools and they can be safe and they can be used for self-defense. What we have to do is we have to get beyond the political correctness. The parents have to get involved in the schools, because a lot of these areas, the parents have abdicated the raising of their children to the schools.
That's right.
And even to the point of discipline, we've done away with most discipline within the school. We don't really assess the children to see what their issues are, but we also don't punish them anymore. And I'm not talking about capital punishment. I grew up in the environment where, you know, there was a boat paddle used.
Oh, yeah, no, the teachers, they used it. Absolutely. And listen, I can top all of you. I in my seventh grade, I was hung out the window from my science teacher by my ankles, Arnetta. How do you like that stuff? And it was, oh, yeah, and I still remember his name. I don't know if where he is today, but Mr. Gambardella. And the high school was right on the side of an interstate highway by chance. And he took me by the ankle, and I'm talking real ankles here, and hung me out of the window and said, "You little bastard, you will not be throwing those frog legs around in my room."
And that stopped you, I'm sure.
I did not throw the frog legs again, Arnetta.
That's it. But in today's environment, what do you think if that happened to a child, what would the parent do in this time and age?
There would be a lawsuit, clearly, right? There'd be a lawsuit. Back to the family component you're talking about, Arnetta. Well, 68% of shooters obtain the weapons from their home or the home of a relative. And that, again, comes back to accessibility of firearms. So I guess the next question I have, is there responsibility there? Shouldn't there be responsibility, Karen, with securing your firearms? Because, you know, we hear sometimes lawsuits about that. Somebody says, well, they could be sued or this or that. But shouldn't there be responsibility for people to lock up their firearms accordingly, or if the kids are obtaining them?
If we want to get responsibility, we have to teach responsibility, and we're not teaching responsibility. What we really need is a good gun education in all of the schools, because it's absolutely right. They are a tool, just like a computer. And they are not going to get up by themselves and go shoot anybody. We also have been coddling our children to the point that they're babies until they're 26. And this was done on purpose. The other thing I believe we have to recognize is that there's no desire to change anything, because the left, the communists, don't believe that people are people. They are a group, and they are only as good as their group. So if one person shoots a couple of people, it gives them a good talking point to be able to confiscate the guns, which is what their real goal is. So they have no desire to stop or change anything. Otherwise, they would do that and would have done it a long time ago. So we have multiple things happening simultaneously. But the bottom line is, when you don't teach morality and you don't teach responsibility and you don't teach self-esteem, then this is what we get. We get a society that goes out and does anything they want, any day they want, any time they want, because they're taught that that's the truth of the day. So shooting people is their truth of the day. Truth today.
Karen, you have you're like the godmother of wisdom or something, whatever that title is, huh, Eva? I mean,
definitely,
wow.
Definitely. I love her points. The points that she makes, because they're right spot on.
Spot on, man. You can't argue with some of that. It is a generational problem in society. There is the decimation of this society where there's a lack of responsibility. There's a lack of all of this stuff. And when you add in the other components of technology and internet and lack of responsibility, and families are busy, like Arnetta says, the family component, there is no family component anymore. The kids are their self managing themselves. Both parents are probably working. Then you've got the downhill spike of drugs and other factors that play into it. So there's a lot of components that go into this. We talked about the confiscation of guns. Now, you heard me give the scenario to Lieutenant Joe about some greater force was going to evaporate all our guns from the planet. I mean, like, that's a real possibility. So here's the thing. Ava, what I really can't wrap my arms around a lot is that who I blame for all of this are the adults in the room. And I use that word really tongue in cheek, people, adults, huh? And so we talk about our leaders, our political leaders and what have you, but they show it, they set a very bad example for this generation and the society that Karen has put out there in such a way. They're showing a horrible example because we fight about everything, we agree about nothing, and they know damn well. Far left knows you can't remove all the guns from society. It's not going to happen. They know this. These people are not stupid. I mean, everybody says they're stupid. They're not stupid, Ava. They know what they want, which is what Karen just says. That's what they want. But they know you can't remove all the guns. You're not going to remove. So, but yet they don't come to the table to solve the problem, do they?
No, and they're actually fomenting more anger and you know, roiling up the masses. I think the politicians are probably one of our biggest problems in this country. It's very simple how to solve this. Like I said, we can use Israel's model. You know, it's excellent. There's nothing wrong with it. You know, it as a gun owner myself, yes, there's a terrific amount of responsibility that comes along with that. And you learn that when you train with an instructor. Mm-hmm. They teach you all these things, and it's marvelous. And I have plenty of guns here, but I know where they are, and they're locked up, and the ammo's not in them, you know?
That's right. And then again, shouldn't we be regulating what the kids are watching and putting into their brains? I mean, that was a big focus of today's talk here. A lot of the responsibility comes back to parents. It comes back to all of us. I mean, we can't throw the full responsibility on the schools, people. I mean, that's not fair.
No, either. I think violent video games, and I think violent movies, I know for my daughter, I would not let her watch those things. Things like Natural Born Killers. And
I don't like them.
I mean, a lot of our society has become very violent. And it you know, that's like entertainment now, violence.
Yeah, totally.
It's not a movie that has a story. Yeah. It just is a movie about special
violence. There's a lot of it. I think it's way out of control. I think that's our biggest culprit. Karen, speak to that point real quickly. You agree with that point?
Absolutely. And guess what? Movies like that make money. And that's the goal.
That's
the goal.
It, love.
Is not the people. The goal is the money and control. I just picked up a book that I had on my desk, and it is the NEA, which is the National Education Association Propaganda Front of the Radical Left. Mm-hmm. And on the cover of the book is a bulletin board. This book was written in 1982. And right on the bulletin board, it says, ban guns.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
So this is nothing new.
Nothing new. It's been a long-range plan. Yeah, it's a big long-range plan. Well, again, it's a pivotal point and of what's really happening out there. But there is a component here that has to happen in all of this, and we've got to be concerned. Arnetta, last point here, last thought from you on the societal factor of, again, what the kids are watching and feeding into their brains. I think this is a big factor in things. And as Karen agrees with that, Ava agrees with that. How about yourself?
I do agree with it on a lot of the bases. And yet at the same time, my son, who is now 36 years old, he did watch those movies. He did play those video games, but he hasn't gone out and shot and killed anyone. Basically, it's the health of the person involved. And yes, there needs to be guidelines and parents need to be more
diligent. All right. So what you point out at the end here then is a fascinating cliffhanger, Arnett, I have to tell you, because what you're saying is, even if you do all that, even if, you know, you have all that response, you know, and you and the kid does all of that stuff and does the movies and does the video games, that's not a license that kid's going to go out and be a killer. So then you have to come back to the question, people, do you penalize the rest of them? Big thank you here again to, our peanut gallery, affectionately here, Karen Schoen, Ava Armstrong, Arnetta Notkin here. It's where the Out Loud Truth continues, AmericaOutLoud.com.